bangthebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Friday, September 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we wrap up this week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two segments left to come your way for this week. The first, my Westgate Super Contest selection segment for week four. Yes, already week four of the NFL season. Of course, getting underway on Thursday night with that Eagles versus Packers game. Not on my Super Contest card, so I will talk about the three games that look very likely to be picks for me this week, and then also a handful of leans. A lot of games I like more as leans than as picks, but as we know, when it comes to the Super Contest, as well as the Circa Million, got to come up with five plays, so I'll do the best I can to do that here on today's show. Second half of today's show, Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, will join us for this week's version of the odds report. Sharp money out there in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. Lots of interesting stuff. Always good to get that look from the other side of the counter. We'll do that with Brent here a little bit later in the show. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff from our very talented, very esteemed cast of writers over there. We've got power ratings for both the NFL and college football. NFL from Danny Borgs, college football from myself. Starting to get our weekend picks rolling in here. Jonathan Willis looking at the FCS. Admir Aljic and Alan Moody with best bets, system picks, totals picks of the week, sides of the week. A lot of different stuff going on with them over at the website. Andrew Howard's NFL prop betting picks will be up again this weekend. And, of course, I've got a preview up for this weekend's UFC event. For the two NASCAR events down at Charlotte Motor Speedway, we'll have continued coverage of the WNBA playoffs. And also next week, Major League Baseball playoffs get underway. So we'll have coverage of that as well. Make sure you keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. Also, make sure you check out our Bang the Book YouTube page. Four free pick videos up from me this week, including some thoughts on three of the four college football games for Friday night. And I gave you thoughts on yesterday's show about that San Jose State versus Air Force game. So you can check those out as well. And also some free pick videos for the NFL from Brian Blessing over there on our YouTube page also. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Before we dig into the meat and potatoes of the show here today, a few things. One, you can get all of the archived segments for Bang the Book Radio over at bangthebook.com. And, of course, you can find us on Spreaker, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Podbean, TuneIn, SoundCloud. Wherever you look for podcast content, you're going to find Bang the Book Radio there. And, of course, like I have been doing here with the Friday shows because Skype doesn't let me talk to myself, I wound up doing the first part of the show and the transitions on Blog Talk Radio, and then we do the segment with Brent on Skype. Again, not the most optimal of solutions, but the way that we do it here on Fridays keeps it easy for me, keeps it consistent with the sound for the rest of the week. So just want to remind you of that. And, of course, this was recorded on Thursday evening, both my Super Contest segment and the segment with Brent. So some of these lines may have moved around. Of course, the Super Contest lines and the Circa Million lines don't move, but there may be some news, there may be some new injury updates, something like that. So, again, you don't want to take everything with a grain of salt, but simply to say that some things may have changed from Thursday night to Friday morning. The picks that I talk about here for the Super Contest segment, like I say, I'll never go against the ones that are very likely to be picks unless there's some sort of catastrophic quarterback injury or something like that. But as far as the leans go, some of them may make the card, some of them may not. And in fact, with some of the leans, you know, maybe I'll find something where I kind of like the other side a little bit. So again, do the best I can to get this show out to you early on Fridays. Make sure we wrap up the week on the shows. But again, things may change a little bit with some of the information that's on these Thursday night recordings. In any event, as we look at the Super Contest here for week four, 3-2 for both of our entries last week. Our Bang the Book dash one and bangthebook.com-1 entry, 4-1 in the Circa Million, my entry 3-2. So 3-2 week for both of my entries last week. Now 8-7 in the Super Contest with the Bang the Book podcast entry. 9-6 for the bangthebook.com entry. Last week, the field comes in at 58.04%. Outstanding week overall in the Super Contest. Top five consensus goes 4-1 last week. Seahawks the only loser there. Now 10-5 on the season for the five most selected sides. I would not expect that to continue. I would expect that to regress closer to 500 as the full body of work comes together over the 85 picks in this contest. But so far, the top five consensus is doing quite well. Last week's overall consensus, 9-7, now 23-25 through 3 weeks. So the most selected sides in each individual game hovering around 500 there at 23-25. But the top five consensus has been very good at 10-5. And of course, keep in mind too, in week two, that Browns versus Jets game, very heavy top five consensus play, most selected side of all time, because the Sam Darnold news came out Thursday morning after the Super Contest lines had already been posted, but before the Circa Million lines had been posted. So that was a pretty interesting development there between the two contests. Year to date in the Super Contest, 54.84% for the field overall. As we look at the Super Contest gold, how about this? 65.13% for the Super Contest gold field last week. The consensus came in at 13-3. Top five consensus was 4-2 because for the second straight week, the fifth most popular side was a tie. So we've got a top five consensus on the year of 12-5 with a consensus of 27-19. I can't really cut off plays that tie for the fifth most selected side. So we have 17 top five picks in the gold with back-to-back weeks, the fifth most popular team coming in with the same number of pick counts. The year-to-date over in the gold, 57.42%. Once again, like I said, usually the gold, at least what we've seen in the previous 2 years, generally holds about 2.5 to 3% above the Super Contest traditional field. That's what we've seen here so far. Over in the Circa Million, like I said, my entry last week went 3-2, now 6-8-1 on the season over there. Our other entry is 10-4-1, so a very good start for that one. The field last week, 58.27%, now just shy of 53% at 52.98 for the season. So Circa Million field a little bit lower than the Super Contest field, but of course keep in mind the Super Contest field had the luxury of that Browns game with the 4 points of line value where it was taken over 2,000 times by the 3,328 contestants. The Circa Million, the Browns were a 6.5-point favorite, taken by fewer than 200 of the 1,875 entrants. So that game, probably the difference between the year-to-date success rates for both of those fields. Now, one thing I do want to mention here real quickly, this has no relevance to this week or my entry in the Super Contest, but I did see this week that the Super Contest is doing a Super Contest reboot halfway through the year. So beginning with week 9, for $500, you can get back in the Super Contest, or if you weren't in the Super Contest to begin with, you could start a fresh entry here at the midway point of the season. This is probably to combat the fact that the Circa Million giving away those quarterly prizes where you go 0-20 in the first 4 weeks, 20-0 in the second 4 weeks. Well, you're 20-20, which wouldn't have you anywhere near the top of the leaderboard in either contest, but those quarterly prizes reset in the Circa Million to where it doesn't matter what you did in the first 4 weeks. It only matters what you do in those 4 weeks. So that keeps relevance to the contest all year long because you always have a chance at those quarterly prizes. For the Super Contest, you've got the mini contest at the end, the $20,000 winner take all for weeks 15 through 17, which I believe last year was split 10 ways. But now you have this Super Contest reboot as well. So gives you some incentive to get back into the Westgate $500 entry fee. You can still use your proxy for that as well. Not something right now that we have any plans to do, but of course we'll see what happens here with both of our entries as the season goes along. So in looking overall at the card here for week 4, it looks like it's going to be a lot more competitive of a week. We've got fewer big spreads out there. We've got, a touchdown game. It's only 6.5 in the Super Contest. With the Browns and the Ravens. You've got, of course, Miami, a substantial underdog at home to the Los Angeles Chargers. Jets are on a bye, so we don't have to worry about a big number with them. a lot of games hovering around key numbers or sitting in that 4-6 range, kind of hiding out in the dead zone. So as I was going through the card here, I found this to be one of the more difficult ones of the week, just one of the more difficult ones of the year so far, simply because I think there are a lot of games that can go either way. We're sort of in that line range where that's very much a possibility for a lot of these games. So I had a hard time this week narrowing down the card. Like I said, more leans than picks overall for me so far this week. Some things I like a little bit, some things I like a little bit more, some things I like quite a bit. I'll go through those here on this segment. But, you know, again, that's the challenging part about the Super Contest here is, you know, if this was just my personal bankroll, I'd play the two or three games I really like. Because it's not, and I've got to pick five of them, that's where the difficulty comes in with this contest, because a lot of times you will, and I've got five games this week that list as leans. And right now it looks like I'm only going to pick two of them. And you sit there and you second guess and you fine tooth comb every one of those games and then hope you pick the right ones to add to your Super Contest card. Because if you don't, you know, like last week, for example, I had the Cowboys and the Bears both on my list of leans and wound up not going with either one of them. And, you know, that's sometimes what happens here. Or no, it was 2 weeks ago that I had the Cowboys, a week ago that I had the Bears, didn't go with either one of them. Both of them came through and the plays I took instead didn't come through. And it's hard to turn the page from that where, you know, you had a game right there in front of you, right there on your card. And for whatever reason or for whatever betting angle, you took the wrong one. And that happens a lot here in this contest. And, you know, if you're going to do well in this contest, you've got to pick the right one more often than not. Again, I've used this analogy before and I will continue to. It's like the World Series of Poker main event. You know, you got to run good every time you've got two overs against a middle pair. You've got to hit some of your, you know, 3 and 4 outers. You've got to win your, you know, 33% underdog hands. You know, you've got to win those plays here in the Super Contest to do really well. And you're going to have a lot of those coin flip types of situations, narrowing down the last play or the last couple plays on your card. So hopefully this week I wind up picking the right ones. In any event, we'll start with the three plays that are very likely to make my card here. Again, going by Super Contest rotation order for these, starting with number 13, the Kansas City Chiefs. They're a 6.5-point favorite on the road against the Detroit Lions. This is a game I talked about on Thursday's edition of Bang the Book Radio with Brad Powers. We've got a double or nothing, probably dinner bet sitting on this one here, where I like the Chiefs. You know, the Lions, look, I mean, they're 2-0-1. You give them credit for that. But they're a bounce here or there away from being 0-3 or maybe 0-2-1, you know, maybe 1-1-1. They're really fortunate to be undefeated at this point in time. As we all know, very well documented, they play prevent defense in the fourth quarter against the Cardinals, blow that lead. Cardinals on their first possession went right downfield, wound up settling for a field goal there. You know, if they get a touchdown, that's a really bad collapse for Detroit that winds up in a loss. Week two, they play the Chargers. The Chargers, not only did they have to travel a long way for this game and also play an early kickoff, but they had two missed field goals. They fumbled in the end zone. They had two touchdowns taken off the board on the same drive by penalties. That's a game that very easily could have gone the other way for the Lions. Week three, they play the Eagles. I was on the Lions last week. One of my favorite picks did come through, did get to the window, and they won the game outright as a 6-point underdog in the Super Contest. But the Eagles were shorthanded. They had three offensive pass interference penalties, gave up a kick return touchdown, Philadelphia -2 in turnover margin. I think this is a good spot to fade the Lions here. I think they've been living on the right side of variance. A lot of things have been going right for Detroit so far this season. And you're going to find a lot of scenarios over the course of the year where you want to fade a team. And maybe you have to fade that team. You know, Pittsburgh may be an example. You know, fading Pittsburgh, who had a very misleading cover last week against the 49ers. A lot of people would probably like to go against Pittsburgh this week. A lot of people probably will go against Pittsburgh this week. But to do it, you have to back the Cincinnati Bengals. In this instance, I want to go against Detroit, and I can do it with Kansas City, one of the best teams in the NFL, 7.6 yards per play. They're scoring on 58% of their possessions. And somehow this team, with all of its talent, all of its weapons, all the Patrick Mahomes throws, just 6 for 12 on scoring touchdowns in the red zone so far. Now, I get it. Kansas City's defense is not great. I understand that. But they've got a pretty decent pass rush, despite only having 7 sacks so far. Matt Stafford does not move well. We know he had the back injury last year, and in fact, that kind of carried over to this year's preseason. He doesn't move particularly well, so Kansas City can get back there, can disrupt him. Darius Slay's been struggling in coverage. He's a guy that's got to be better for the Lions here, in particular when you talk about playing a team like Kansas City. I don't think that's going to be the case, so I want to fade the Lions, and I've got a good chance to do it here with Kansas City, laying less than a touchdown on the road. First game in a dome for Pat Mahomes in his NFL career. You got to think he's going to like that. I mean, obviously he's got the arm strength to cut it through the wind and the elements, but you know, here he's in a dome, nothing to worry about. Fast track should speed up his skill, guys. So give me Kansas City here, -6.5, number 13 in the Super Contest rotation order. Next up on the board here, number 24, the Minnesota Vikings. They're +1.5 against the Chicago Bears. Now, I'm bummed I didn't take the Bears last week. Like I said, they were on my list of leans. Figured Trubisky and the offense would be better, and they were better to a degree in that 31-15 win. But also, it was not a particularly convincing offensive performance for Chicago. 5.1 yards per play. Now, they moved the chains. I think they were 8-for-13 on third down. They did what they had to do, but man, a lot of dink and dunk, quick throws, screen passes, nothing downfield, no downfield threat from Mitch Trubisky at all whatsoever. And the Vikings have an elite level defense. They're pretty healthy overall here coming into this game, which is a good thing for them because last year it felt like they were never at 100% back there in that defense. They can play close to the line. They can press up and defend the run. They can press up and defend those underneath throws. And when you look at the Bears last week, you know, yeah, they had the 16-point win, but they were +4 in turnover margin, had a pick six, and an 11-yard touchdown drive. So once again, only 17 offensive points for Chicago with those 5 turnovers from Washington. So still not a good offensive performance at all for the Bears in Monday night's game. And also you got the quick turnaround here. Chicago's got some guys banged up. Doesn't look like Akeem Hicks is going to play. He's a big loss in terms of stopping the run. Trey Burton's probably out. Taylor Gabriel, still in concussion protocol. Eddie Jackson was limited in practice this week. You know, the Bears don't give themselves much margin for error, and they've got a couple key defensive injuries. They have not exceeded 300 yards of offense yet in any of their 3 games here so far. And I understand, once again, you know, there's always a caveat in the NFL. You know, in college football, you don't find as many of these buts or, well, you know, there's this angle or this or that. In the NFL, you get it in every game. And I fully understand Kirk Cousins is awful against bad teams. It's very, very well documented. He does not play well against good defenses. But still, I think there's enough here for the Vikings with the way that Dalvin Cook is playing. He's just running like a madman. Leads the NFL in yards after contact, I'm pretty sure. Either that or he's number 2. Thielen and Diggs, they're alter egos, of course. But Thielen and Diggs, you know, 2 guys that can get open. This will be a physical game. Maybe you'll get a little more of those push-offs from Diggs or something like that to come through. But still, I think the Vikings, because of their running game, can slow down that pass rush. And I just don't think the Bears really do much of anything offensively. I don't think Minnesota needs to be great with the football in this game to not only cover the number, obviously, at 1.5, but win the game outright. So I'm going to take the Vikings here, +1.5. Again, wish this was 2.5, wish this was 3, but you know, the market is coming in on the Vikings here this week. And by the way, something I heard on the Matchbook podcast, which is very, very good, by the way, including Whale Capper, somebody who's very esteemed out there in the Twitter community. You know, 12-4 against the spread, 4 line moves last week. So the sharp line moves are coming through. At least they did last week. We got a little bit more data to go on now. I think the line moves do well here again this week. And I'm not chasing the steam. I'm not chasing a line move. Just, again, every piece of information you try to use to strengthen your case, whether it's a trend or a situational angle or something like that to a side that you already like. And if it's something that goes against the game you already like, well, you've got to take that into consideration too. But the Vikings on a short week for the Bears, the Bears offense looks bad. Line moving on the Vikings, which I do agree with. Give me Minnesota here. +1.5, number 24 in the Super Contest rotation order. One more game that's very likely to make my card here, and then we'll take a look at the set of leans. The New Orleans Saints, +2.5 on Sunday Night Football. A little bit of a contrarian home dog here against the Dallas Cowboys. And if you can be contrarian with a home dog in some of these, or even a home favorite for that matter, in these primetime games, it's not a bad spot to be in. Of course, we'll see what happens with this line as we get closer to kickoff here. But there are a few reasons I like this game. You know, of course, the Saints bonding well on their long road trip. Teddy Bridgewater played very well. They had a very good game plan for him. And I get it. Maybe the Seahawks just suck. You know, maybe they're just not a very good team. I'll talk about that again when we get to my list of leans. But the Cowboys really feel like an overachiever right now. Or maybe they've just taken advantage of a very bad schedule. You know, in week one, the Giants, who have one of the worst secondaries in the NFL, had no idea what to do with Kellen Moore's offense. You know, it was very clear that Kellen Moore didn't show much in the preseason. Giants got lost in coverage. They were all over the place. They had no clue. Cowboys win and move the football a ton in that game. In week two, the Cowboys played the Dolphins. You know, the Dolphins, not a good team at all. You know that. I know that. And then also Dallas having played the Redskins. So, you know, Dallas has not played a creme de la creme of opponents by any means. You know, they've had a pretty easy path, I would say, here to everything that's been going on with them. And I misspoke there. The Cowboys, of course, playing Washington in week two, Miami last week in week three. So my apologies for that. Don't want to confuse anybody there. But the point remains, Dallas has not played a very good schedule here. You know, they've played teams that are deeply flawed. And that's not to say that New Orleans is phenomenal or anything like that, but New Orleans is easily the best team offensively and defensively that Dallas will have played to this point. So this is a pretty big step up in class here. And one of the things I've noticed a lot, you know, looking at all 22 film reviews, write-ups on The Athletic, stuff like that, Kellen Moore's offense is creating a lot of confusion, a lot of motion, a lot of movement. They're getting mismatches. These opposing defenses don't really know what to do. And, of course, the three defenses that they played, not overly strong anyway. So there's that to consider. But when you look at New Orleans, they've got a lot of guys from Ohio State. You know, they've got Eli Apple now. They've got Von Bell. They've got Marshawn Lattimore. Those are guys that played together in college. Those are guys that, you were very familiar with each other, practiced together, so on and so forth. They can communicate better than most teams can. You know, you've always got a rotating door of personnel in the secondary, no matter what NFL team you are. But the Saints have guys that played together in college. And I think that could really help them against this Cowboys offense. Because, again, the whole goal of motion and movement is there are two goals. One is to confuse the defense. The other is to see what, you know, the slot corner, the nickel corner, what the linebackers and the safeties are going to do. The Saints should be better at communicating here with those guys that have a lot of familiarity playing together. So I think that could be a big positive for New Orleans in this game. Now, look, I get it. The Saints have given up a lot of yards this season. I fully understand that. A lot of yards in garbage time last week by the Seahawks that made that game a lot worse than it actually was. And again, the Cowboys here, they are a regression candidate. Their opponents, again, Giants, Redskins, and Dolphins, 7-for-35 on offense on third down. The Cowboys offense, 58.1% on third down. So not only are they extending the chains and maximizing their possessions, they're taking away the possessions of the opposition. The Saints should be better, much better, in both areas. That should bring Dallas back down to earth here, at least a little bit in this game. And I think the Saints have more than enough at home coming off of a really big team-building experience and a team-building win out there in the Pacific Northwest to take this game down. Again, wish it was 3. 3 was available out there a little bit earlier on in the week. But give me number 28, the Saints, +2.5 here in the Super Contest as the last of my very likely picks to go along with Vikings plus 1.5 and Chiefs minus 6.5. So with that in mind, let's look at some leans here. And again, got to find two more plays for the Super Contest card. So some games that I've got some thoughts on, some games that I like, some games that I wouldn't necessarily say that I love, at least not at this point in time. Some I do like more than others, though. This is one I would say is probably on the lower end of the lean spectrum. But looking at number three, the Houston Texans minus 4.5, I'm not ready to buy the Kyle Allen hype as of yet. You know, the Cardinals just seemed woefully prepared for what the Panthers were going to do with Kyle Allen. And, of course, Christian McCaffrey is a game changer in every game that he's in. So I don't want to buy too much into what Carolina did offensively in that game. Houston now has film on Kyle Allen, has now seen what the Panthers want to do in the different sets with him. Also, Houston, a much, much stronger pass rush than what Arizona is able to put out there. So that should help the Texans a little bit in this spot as well. The Texans last week, they altered some protections. They made some changes on the offensive line, and they worked. Deshaun Watson had more time to throw in that game than he's had all season long. That was against the Chargers, who've got some very, very good pass rushers. So maybe Bill O'Brien kind of finding, you know, some magic potion, some pixie dust, whatever you want to call it, to throw on this offensive line. And they played pretty well last week. So I think that could be a big help for Houston here this week. I do wonder where Duke Johnson has been, but, you know, Deshaun Watson, legitimate weapons at wide receiver, moves the football, uses his legs, very, very good player. And when you look at some things here otherwise about this game, you know, Arizona, they just couldn't keep the offense on the field. Houston's 50% on third down. That's top five in the NFL. And again, that's very important in today's day and age. You know, just about every team can score points. It's about third down success, about getting off the field and staying on the field. Arizona can't stay on the field. Houston can. So Texans minus 4.5 on the short list of leans for me. Again, probably on the lower end of that list right now. But as more information comes out about injury reports and all that type of stuff, you know, we'll see if this one winds up moving up the board in terms of strength for my card for week four. Number eight, the Washington Redskins are plus 3. They go up against the New York Giants here this week. What I'm worried about here is the Washington quarterback situation for obvious reasons. Case Keenum in a walking boot. It comes off on Thursday. He practices for the Redskins. I'd feel better if he was able to go here in this game because the Giants defense, as I mentioned already, is just not good. Their secondary is not good at all whatsoever. The Redskins are stepping down in class here. You play the Eagles in week one. They played well in the first half, poorly in the second half. The Cowboys in that offense, and you can get the Bears defense on Monday night. And that is a bit of a concern here as well with the Redskins and Keenum in particular coming off of the short week rest. That's certainly a concern. But the Redskins here on the year, again, against the Eagles, Cowboys, and Bears, and the Cowboys are thought to have a pretty good defense too. 10 for 31 on third down, and they've allowed 26 of 41 third down conversions, 63% on defense. That's dead last in the NFL. I've got to think that that positively regresses for them, both offensively to some degree and especially defensively. You know, Washington is not a great defensive team. I fully get that. They don't have much of a pass rush, but they're still not going to be dead last in third down conversion rate against. At least I wouldn't think so with some of the other bottom feeders that are out there. Keep in mind, the Giants last week getting blown out at half, came back, won the game. Everyone's anointing Daniel Jones as, you know, the guy there. Now, for the Giants, and maybe he is, but I think it's also a game that, you know, says a lot about the Bucs and maybe about the Bucs' focus level, which is ironic because I'll talk about them here in a couple of minutes. But look, the Giants don't get much of a pass rush. They don't pressure the quarterback well at all. It's part of the reason why their secondary has been so carved up so far this season. And when Keenum has time to throw, he's not a bad quarterback. So again, kind of looking at it as the Giants aren't going to get there, going to give Keenum some chances. The Giants are down two linebackers, including Alec Ogletree. And of course, as we all know, no Saquon Barkley. And I think it's easier sometimes to adjust within the course of a game than it is to go all week in practice not having your guy. You know, because not to say that you have an advantage during the game when you lose one of your star players and the best player on your team, but simply to say that you got to do things differently. Everybody kind of steps up a little bit. And the opposing defense has to prepare for something in the second half that maybe they weren't accustomed to or weren't expecting. Without Barkley here this week, the Redskins don't have to worry about the Giants' running game. You know, they don't have to worry as much about Daniel Jones or, you know, previously Eli Manning having that safety valve and that security blanket out there. They just worry about defending the pass now because the Giants are going to have to throw the football. Redskins are 0-3, backs against the wall. They play the Patriots next week, so they're looking at 0-5 if they don't win this one. They've got film on Daniel Jones. And also here, the Giants secondary this season, according to Pro Football Focus, the worst secondary grade in a decade over the first 3 weeks of the season. So the Redskins plus 3 on my list of leans here. Not sure I love this one, but the Miami Dolphins plus 15.5. I get it. You know, it's a gamble every week as to whether or not the Dolphins are going to care, as if they're going to play well. But I thought Josh Rosen looked better last week. You know, the wide receivers didn't help him much at all. Had some drops for him in week one against New England also. The Chargers are banged up. It's a long trip. Their second long trip of the year already because they played in Denver in week two. It's an early kickoff. And they've got – or they played in Detroit in week two, excuse me. And they've got Denver on deck. So I think it's a tough spot for the Chargers here to be fully motivated, fully invested, and fully engaged to go out there and get margin. Now, of course, the downside is the Chargers are coming off of back-to-back losses, so they've got a lot of incentive to be ready for this game. But at some point, professional pride has to kick in for Miami, right? I mean, it has to. And the Chargers are a good team. You know, they're not on New England's level. I don't think they're really on Baltimore's level. And you can make a pretty strong case they're not on Dallas's level. I think they're a very good team. When they're healthy, you know, they're up there as one of the six playoff teams in the AFC. Not a very healthy team right now. So Dolphins plus 15.5, it's kind of staring at me. Maybe this is the week to take them at home. Again, a team coming on a long trip. You know, could be hot and humid in Miami as well. So maybe the Chargers just aren't ready to go here in this one. Maybe the Dolphins can hang around. And this isn't solely a punt, you know, just to put a fifth play on the card, but it's simply a game that I was kind of looking at here and thinking, you know what, maybe the stage is kind of set for the Dolphins to go out there and cover a number. I mentioned, you know, maybe that loss says more about the Buccaneers than the win says about the Giants, but number 20, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going out to Los Angeles plus 9.5. There's some intrigue and some interest about this game for me. I was not impressed at all with the Rams. Not impressed at all with Jared Goff. Jared Goff is very lucky to have elite route runners because they saved him in that game against the Browns. You've got Todd Bowles doing really good work with this Tampa Bay defense. 9 sacks, 5 takeaways, holding the opposition at 3 yards per carry. Tampa Bay is actually plus 0.4 yards per play on the season. That would suggest some better fortunes coming up here for the Buccaneers. Also, yeah, you look for positive regression in terms of red zone trips, third down conversions for and against, stuff like that. Tampa Bay on the year, just 3 for 11 scoring touchdowns in the red zone, just 11 for 37 on third down. I've got to think some positive regression is coming for them. Now on the Rams side, their offensive line had issues protecting against the Browns. Tampa Bay's pass rush is not on Cleveland's level, but it's been pretty good, especially with the way that Shaq Barnett has played so far this season. Rams have a short week with Seattle on deck next week. Chance to bury one of their NFC West rivals. You know, maybe the 49ers are a bigger game for them now than the Seahawks. But still, I think it's a consideration here. And again, maybe the Rams try to force feed Todd Gurley. Maybe they try to get that running game going. I think that plays into what Tampa Bay wants them to do in terms of the game flow for this one. So Tampa Bay plus 9.5, very much on my radar. A lot of teams are making good adjustments to Sean McVay and that offense. Wrote a great article over at The Athletic about that today and about what the Browns did to try and take away some of Goff's outlets. Goff throws the 2 picks, didn't look very good. I think it's one of those things where the Goff road splits are such a popular narrative. I think maybe people just chalk it up to that. But also, it's entirely possible that Jared Goff is just regressing. And that he's regressing because he's not very good at reading defenses and because defenses are more prepared for Sean McVay. Todd Bowles and I mentioned this on yesterday's show, some guys just aren't cut out to be a head coach. I don't think Todd Bowles was cut out to be a head coach, but he's got great upside as a defensive coordinator. I think he's got a good game plan for Tampa Bay here this week, as long as Jameis Winston can avoid too many of those back-breaking picks or throw a pick six or something like that. I think Tampa Bay can keep this game close. So this is one of the leans I do like a little bit more. Number 20, the Buccaneers, +9.5. Finally, one more game here on my leans list. Number 22, the Arizona Cardinals, +5.5 in the Super Contest against the Seattle Seahawks. And really, this would just be a fade of Seattle. You know, is Seattle really worthy of being a road favorite of this size? They were dominated by the Saints last week without Drew Brees for three quarters, added on those garbage yards in the fourth quarter. They struggled badly with Cincinnati in week one. They did beat the Steelers, but the Steelers are certainly in shambles here. Cardinals with 11 red zone trips, only four touchdowns, settling for a lot of field goals inside the five. You know, some better play selection could help them quite a bit. Again, this would be a fade of Seattle more than a play on Arizona. But like I said, I just don't think Seattle is worthy of being this big of a road favorite. I know Kyler Murray going through some growing pains, and the Cardinals don't seem to know how to use David Johnson very well, but the Seahawks just don't look very good. Chris Carson's coughing the ball up. The defense doesn't look all that great. Russ has saved them the last couple of weeks, as he usually does. Arizona could be very competitive in this game. Now, they don't have the greatest of pass rushes, but still, I think, you know, maybe a pass rush against Russ, he can get out of there. He can throw on the run. So maybe just playing a good base defense would help the Cardinals out a little bit here this week. So again, Cardinals +5.5, number 22 in the Super Contest rotation order on my short list of leans here. So to recap the very likely plays for week four, Chiefs -6.5, the number 13 in the Super Contest rotation order. Vikings number 24 are +1.5. Saints number 28 +2.5. And the leans here again in rotation order, not in order of confidence. The Texans -4.5, Redskins +3, Dolphins +15.5, Buccaneers +9.5, and Cardinals +5.5. So three very likely picks, five leans I'm going to have to narrow down. You can find our Super Contest picks every Saturday over at bangthebook.com in our Super Contest article, as well as the pick counts for every game, the top five consensus, and the overall consensus for the Super Contest. And also over in the Circa Million, we write up an article for that on Saturdays as well. We got one more guest, one more segment left for this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is with Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook. A lot of sharp action in college football and the NFL. Lots of talking points, lots of stuff for us to go over. Once again, recorded that on Skype, so you will notice the volume difference and things of that sort. Do everything I can in the editing process. I think it comes out pretty well. But still, in any event, the segment with Brent recorded via Skype. So keep that in mind here as you're listening along. But here is this week's version of the Odds Report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. All right, I'm joined now by Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the Odds Report. Brent, how's it going today, man?
Well, I woke up and found out it was week four of the NFL already. It's just like, it's crazy how fast this came upon us and how it's going.
Well, think about it. Just 6 weeks until college basketball, which I know is your favorite sport. So
yeah.
I know you're looking forward to those long days and nights. But in any event, we got a lot of games to get to here, both in college and the NFL. So no reason to waste any time here as we go ahead and start on Saturday, game 115-116, Wake Forest and Boston College, side and total getting some sharp interest there at DSI this week.
Yeah, and I mean, you can see the way the lines have moved as well. This one here, we got money already on Boston College. This number, I don't know like how it got bet up or where it got bet up so much. Like I see the opening numbers were kind of low, like 4.5 and 5. At least that's what it says on the screen. I got, you know, whether public money drove that up, I don't know. I mean, you are talking about a Wake Forest team that is undefeated so far, and I think they're tipping like the top 25. I think I saw there was, you know, somewhere around 26 if the ratings went that far. But I do have home dog money, which obviously is kind of one of those spots, as you know, Adam, where kind of sharp guys will go to in games like this. Again, it's a big game for these two teams, with Boston College at 3-1, but sharp money at +7 on Boston College. You've seen that the total actually got bet up as well. And again, I think, you know, you talk about how, you know, the sharp money comes in. Sometimes it's initial with a number, you know, maybe there was sharp money elsewhere in the market that, you know, that got bet on Wake Forest -5 or 5.5, whatever, and drove it up to 7. And there's, you know, you get sharps who have differing opinions, and the opinion in the house here was on Boston College +7. Pretty much the same thing with the total. Now, the total, usually you've got your counts favoring the over, and that's no different here. I've got an account almost 5-1 favoring the over. So it looks to me that it was public money that drove this number up. It touched, and again, it's kind of like a waiting game. You talk about, like, when's the right time to strike? Well, this number got as high as 70, and that's where it started coming back down. So I got sharp money at under 70 there. And now we're down to 68.5, I think, is the lowest number on the board. So got driven up from a low number up to 70. Sharp money took the under 70. Now it's down 1.5 to 68.5. Sidewise, as I said, it got bet up again, like from 4.5. Well, 5 is where it opened in here, up to 7. Sharp money came in on Boston College out to 7 and grabbed that.
Well, and of course, as we've talked about too, you know, you have to move kind of in concert with the rest of the market, because you don't want to be exposed at 5.5 if the rest of the market's at 6.5. And there are head fakes. There are some setups early in the week where somebody out there wants a +7. They're going to do what they need to do early in the week to try and get it. That is something we see in the college football market and the NFL market quite often.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously takes, you know, depending on the size of the game, if you will, and the size being the importance of the game, you know, whether you're talking, you know, Utah, Washington State, or you're talking Akron, Massachusetts. I mean, you got it takes different amount of money to move different games based on how big they are. But yeah, that definitely does happen in terms of lower limits. You bet a lower amount to drive a number up, and then when the limits open up, you hit it big.
All right, so we move to the MAC here, game 123-124, Buffalo on the road in Oxford to take on Miami of Ohio. This has been a one-way mover, and it doesn't seem like you've gotten much buyback either.
Yeah, no, I mean, the truth is I didn't really want to include this game in our conversation just because the line has moved so much. But I mean, I don't like picking and choosing what games to talk about. I'd rather just talk about the information that I have at my disposal. And that was sharp money here on this game with Buffalo +2. As you see, looking at your Don Best screen, you can see they're a road favorite now of 3. So you're going from a small dog of +2 all the way up to -3. And that number is painted across the board. So just all one-way action on Buffalo. Obviously, it's not, you know, a game where you got a whole lot of public money involved. I do have my count is almost like dead even. So it's not like I've got, just one way action or any of that, but it's just the fact that the sharp money came in where it did. I'm expecting that probably elsewhere when this number, even when it flipped to Buffalo -1, I'm sure there was sharp money that drove it that way as well. Because as I mentioned, I mean, the public's just slightly involved in this game. Yeah, the count's, you know, close to even, slightly favors Buffalo, sure, but not enough to drive a number this way.
Well, I think what is important to point out, again, you know, sometimes you don't want to mention games where the line has just kind of gotten away, but I mean, this one from +2 to -3 relatively early in the week, which I think is, you know, still a telling enough sign for us to be able to talk about a game like this.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact that it's, you know, when it flips from 2 down to a pick or -1, that's one thing. But when it gets from, like I said, I can pretty much guarantee you that was more sharp money that came on Buffalo when it was a pick, when it was -1 to get to the -3. It just wouldn't move that much if it wasn't sharp money. I didn't take that sharp money in-house other than the +2, but I'm sure it did out there in the market.
All right, so we move here to game 133-134, the absolute game of the week. This one's a true banger. This is a game that everyone's going to be talking about by the end of the year. Akron and UMass, and we do have sharp action on this game.
I sense a little bit of sarcasm there, Adam. Yeah, I mean, big move on this one as well. The number opened as low as 4.5 out in the market. I didn't open that low, but I did open at 5. It just ticked up to 5.5. I took sharp money at the -5.5, and it's gone all the way up to 7, touched the 7. It's past 7 now. It's a 7.5 flat, or, you know, 7.5, maybe dog 15 out there. So this is obviously just all one-way action on Akron here. And again, it's tough when you're talking about, you know, teams like Akron and UMass, a couple of 0-4 teams, I believe. So it's not an attractive game on paper in terms of you want to sit down and watch this game per se, but sharp money did come in, like I said, -5.5. And it's not, you know, my count, as you could imagine, isn't very high. It's also you know, kind of not out of balance as well. I'm almost, you know, perfectly balanced on this game in terms of my actual wager count. Obviously, because I took, you know, a sharp bet at the -5.5, I have more money on Akron. But, you know, other than the 5.5, I haven't seen anything else get involved in this one. A couple of ugly teams, but the sharps found value there.
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, even in my set of power ratings, UMass is the lowest team I've ever had. And I think I've been doing this, you know, 4 or 5 years of putting together power ratings. And I still only have this line like Akron -3. So I'm going to have to move UMass down again. And that's the problem here is if UMass gets blown out in this game by Akron, who's clearly a bottom five team in college football, I mean, how low do you have to go with UMass? Like, what is the stopping point for, you know, getting any money on this team?
Well, that's kind of you flip that and say, you know, is UMass this year the equivalent of the Miami Dolphins in NFL this year? I mean, you know, we talked about the lines before with, you know, how Dallas and New England and stuff like that. You're, you know, talking 21.5, 23.5 point spreads in the NFL. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Yeah, for sure. And again, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. UMass is just going to be an overwhelming underdog against just about everybody they play. By the way, for our listeners out there, we may see UMass on this segment again because they play UConn here the end of October, another real gem of a team. I'm sure there'll be some sharp action in that game too.
UConn's like a 44-point dog, I think, this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to be favored on the road at UMass too. A UMass team coming off of a bye, and they're going to be at least a touchdown favorite, if not more probably.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a real fun game to talk about here in about a month or so. But we move on to game 135-136, another fun one to talk about. Rutgers and Michigan. Michigan up to a 4-touchdown favorite now, but it's the total where you've seen some sharp activity.
Yeah, the spread here ticked up from the 26.5 up to 28. We're pretty much across the board. Everyone's 28. And the move on the total, not a massive move. Again, I mean, obviously this is a correlated game here in terms of the 26 going up to 28 and the total going from 47.5 up to 49.5. That, you know, the total move on my side was sharp money that drove that. 47.5 is where I got bet here, sitting at 49. Like I said, I'm at 49.5. A couple books are at 49. Others sitting at 49 with juice towards the over. So I see, you know, market wide that's pretty much gone the same way. Again, you know, count wise, just not a massive count. And again, yeah, I don't have a ton of public money involved in this game on the total at this point. A lot of it probably will come in on Saturday just because you are talking about Michigan and their games always get a lot of support, whether it's for or against them. So, you know, my chart's going to be decent, I think, even with the high spread and the low total here on this one. But over 47.5 is where I took the sharp money.
All right, so we go to Pac-12 after dark action here. Game 145-146, Washington State and Utah. Before we get into this game specifically, I don't know if you were working during that UCLA-Washington State game, but that thing was insane.
Yeah, I mean, 50 points in a half of football in the second half, that's just like, well, you said insane. That's pretty much the right word for it. But, you know, now that you mentioned that, you look at the Pac-12 in terms of the ratings, I was kind of like flipping through there, and I was like, hey, wait a second, what? Packed. I mean, usually you got a couple of them up there, but I mean, right now I think Oregon is 13, Cal is 15, you got Washington 17, Utah is 19, USC is up there. I mean, it's Pac-12. I mean, representing.
Yeah, for sure. And let's see who represents in this game again. Washington State taking on Utah in Salt Lake City, and it's a tough spot for both of these teams. With Washington State coming off that very disappointing loss. Utah loses to USC in a game with huge Pac-12 South implications. How's the market seeing this one?
Yeah, this is one of those, you know, we talk about, you know, it's always good to identify where you've got sharp and public splits. And in terms of like managing your risk, you know, that's one of those key spots that we always look for, because your chart may get, you know, off one side, and it's kind of like you take a look at a game from a bookmaker side of things and say, you know, based on the risk profile of the game, you know, how much you want to go out of hand. This is one of the, you know, one of the more marquee games, one of the late games, so people are going to kind of look for the last opportunity to pile in on a game. That this is probably one of them that people are going to be jumping on. It's a decent matchup. It'll be on, I think, you know, FS1 or something like that. So we're going to have, you know, decent action on this game, and this is one of those games so that you'll probably get a lot of action on. You kind of anticipate the home favorite getting the support. So again, you're kind of, in terms of a bookmaking side of things, you are kind of booking your anticipated action as it comes in. So we're kind of, you know, looking at favorite money coming in on Utah from the public, and that has been the case. I've got a wager count almost 4-1 on Utah, but as you see, this number kind of ticked up and then ticked right back down. So we got up public money, as you can tell by my chart, almost 4-1 is what drove this up to 7. Got sharp money on Washington State plus 7, and we popped back down to 6. Now, the 6 is pretty much across the board. I don't, you know, I could see it going up to 6.5, but that would be just based on public money. I think the sharp money that grabbed the 7 was grabbing the key number on 7. But, you know, this may tick up from 6 to 6.5, but I can't see it touching 7 again. If it held strong at 6, I wouldn't be surprised either.
So, and obviously, if it goes down to 5.5, maybe subsequently 5, that would be another sharp hit on Washington State, probably.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening, yeah.
All right, so we moved to game 165-166 here. This is one of the better games of the weekend. It's not a great weekend for college football, but we can bet on it, so I guess it is a great weekend no matter what. But Kansas State and Oklahoma State here, this is a game that should draw a lot of activity. 7 o'clock game, couple of well-known teams in the Big 12. Should get a pretty big handle on this one. What have you seen so far?
Yeah, it's a decent game as well. I mean, you know, you got a decent spread in terms of the 4. This did open as high as 5 with the favorite at home, Oklahoma State, down to 4 right now. So that kind of gives me the impression that, you know, maybe there was some sharp money out there that came and grabbed the price back. The reason I say that is because my count heavily favors Oklahoma State, right around 4-1 as well. So that's a pretty substantial count for a college football game, 4-1. So I've got, you know, money one way and the price moving down the other way. So that usually indicates a sharp public split. I didn't take that money in-house, but that's just something, you know, for your listeners to kind of look out for, is that, you know, across the board here, it looks like the count is all favoring the favorite at home, Oklahoma State, yet the numbers dropped down from 5 down to 4 where we are right now. The sharp money that I took in-house came on the under. This one did open as high. I think it opened 63. I got bet out with sharp money on under 62.5. We're down to 60 or 59.5 pretty much out of the markets. Even the 59.5 has juiced towards the over. So let's call it 60. Under 62.5 is where I got bet.
So we go to the Mountain West here, game 193-194, Colorado State and Utah State. And judging by the line move in this game, it's sharp and public going the same way.
Yeah, I got, probably no surprise when you got such a big favorite like that. Utah State opened just below the 3-touchdown favorite at 20.5. I opened at 21, and I got bet right away by sharp money there. So Utah State minus 21 is where I got bet, sitting at 24 across the board right now. I even see as high as 24.5. Some books are putting, you know, juice of minus 15 on the 24. You know, when numbers get that high, especially in college football, I shouldn't even say especially college football, regardless whether NFL, CFL, or college football. I think once you get up to 24, really, why are you putting, you know, 5 cents on a 24, go to 24.5? But some books do that. I'm sitting at 24 right now. I could see this one ticking up. I just don't know what it's going to take to get sharp money back the other way, but public money is obviously going one side.
Is it just a mindset thing of, you know, maybe you opened the 20.5 and got hit and you're afraid of the game falling 21, 23, 24? Is it just like an unwillingness to embrace that risk?
Well, I mean, for me in house, I opened at 21, so I'm not, you know, as concerned about it. But really, I mean, you know, talked about last week, really, once you get up, you know, even 10, I mean, 10's not a key number, even in NFL really anymore, with the 2-point converts and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could still say the key numbers are the key numbers with the 3 and the 7, the 4, the 6, the 10 or whatever. But, you know, at this point, you're really not afraid of any of that. You're really just looking to get some money back the other way, without, you know, putting yourself more at risk. If I go up to 24.5, is it going to come back? Probably not, because another book out there has already touched 24.5 and isn't come back down. So I could see the rest of us going that way. And sometimes you get stuck on a game where it's just, you just say, look, I'm not going any higher, and the market's not going any higher, and you sit with it and you take the risk.
All right, last game on the board here in college football, at least in terms of FBS versus FBS matchups, 203-204, UCLA, Arizona. More Pac-12 after dark, maybe a little bit of a chase game for some people out there. Arizona almost a touchdown favorite. What's happening with this game?
Yeah, and I got another case where it's just big public money one way, smaller bets more bigger bets going the other way with sharp money. This was on UCLA plus the 7.5. So you got UCLA sitting at 1-3 on the road at Arizona, and plus 7.5. This number, I think, open 7, got bet up. Again, just judging by the chart, it was just public money that drove it up. Again, I'm about 5-1 on this chart here with Arizona. So big, you know, that's big one-sided action driving the home favorite, of course. And sharp money took it back at plus 7.5, and it's gone all the way down to 6.5. I see like some 6.5 minus 15. So, you know, I don't know if I touch 7 again, whether the sharp money is going to grab the plus 7. They did grab it at plus 7.5. Maybe the hook was key for them, but we're probably going to find out, because it's just the way the public money's gone so far. I just think we're going to be forced to go back up to 7. If we sit at 7 and kind of get two-way action, that'll be great. If it gets bet by sharps again, you'll see it drop down to 6.5. But I just, again, it's just a feeling that this number might go back up just based on the wager count.
All right, so we move to Sunday here. We move to the NFL, and the first game on the board game, 251-252, Carolina and Houston. And before we talk about the sharp action here, I just want to ask you about this, because I've always been kind of intrigued to know what the thought process is behind opening a game on 5, because we know it's in that dead zone between 4 and 6. My thought process behind it, and I could be very wrong, and I'm not an odds maker, so I don't claim to be, but my thought is that maybe you feel like 4 is too low, 6 is too high, so you open 5 and let the market decide what the number should be.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you do get to there comes a point where you're talking, you know, your teaser kind of stuff comes into play sometimes on a number, like, you know, you 6.5, 7-point teaser, what's that going to do to a number? Maybe not in this case, but still you play around with thoughts like that. You're also looking, you know, buy points and stuff like that. You know, you want to go open up a 4 and they buy it on a 3 or stuff like that. You're always thinking about that. And sometimes, you know, we're just throwing a number out there and letting the market, you know, decide where it goes. I mean, the opinions and information of, you know, this whole massive pool of people are what make up the market, and where the numbers go is a reflection of those opinions. Now, people have differing opinions. Public opinions differ from sharps. Sharps differ from other sharps, right? You can have guys. I mean, I remember there was a scenario. I think it was last year, no, 2 years back on a total. It was one of those wacky games like Oklahoma State or whatever, where between 79.5 and 80, there was just massive action going back and forth between different sharps. Every time we touched down to 79.5, we got hammered on the over. Every time we touched 80.5, we got hammered on the under. So these sharp guys have their key numbers as well. They're waiting for a price. And they, and, you know, they play it. So you're really, you know, trying to move your action based on the market and the varying opinions. And those opinions can be sharp versus public. It can be public versus public, and it can be sharps versus sharps. That happens all the time. And really, kind of when these numbers kind of consensus come out, what I'm doing is kind of anticipating how my action is going to come in. Like if I'm looking at a game like Houston and Carolina, I'm thinking to myself that I believe, just my opinion, that Houston is still an overvalued team. It's one where the public is going to continue to overvalue, where I think the sharps are going to look to find value on Carolina. That was just my opinion of that game. I'm kind of predicting where the action is going to come in, not the actual result of the game.
Yeah, that's an important distinction too, is that, you know, you guys open the numbers and the market's what really sets the number from that point forward. That's something that I think a lot of people have a major misconception about here in the business, especially when, you know, let's say Cleveland and Baltimore is a, you know, 28-21 game or something like that. And everyone's going to say, oh, Vegas knows, because the number was 7. Well, the number opened 6 and the market moved it up to 7. So it is an important distinction that, you know, I think a lot of people don't really realize. But in any event, this Carolina-Houston game opened 5. What happened after that?
Well, I got bet by sharp money, Adam. Glad you asked. Yeah, I mean, right on cue, this is one of those games where, I had the feeling that we were going to get money one side from the public on Houston. And I think Carolina is one of those teams where maybe not, you know, the quarterback situation is kind of, you know, a positive for them for the first time in, you know, probably since the offseason. And Houston is one of those teams where I think from the sharp side is just one where they're looking to sell high. Houston at 2-1, Carolina 1-2 is kind of like a sell high overrated position on Houston, I believe. And that's been reflected in my charts as well. I'm almost 6-1 favoring Houston. So I got a very one-sided chart here in terms of the public sharp split. I have more money on Carolina right now because of the bigger bets that the sharp players make. So a sharp public split here, plus 5 is where the sharp money came in, and the public was still betting Houston. So, you know, know, this is one of those games where, you know, five perhaps is not a key number, but if I go to 4.5, I don't think I'm going to get sharp money back at 4.5. I think I can go back to 4.5 and the public will continue to lay it, but it's kind of one of those cat and mouse things. And I'm just kind of looking out of the marketplace right now. And what I see are fours across the board, even some four dog 15s. So I'm holding still instead of going to 4.5. And again, we're doing this on Thursday. I got so much time before Sunday rolls around.
Yeah, for sure. And again, one more reminder for our listeners here that may be looking at their odds screens following along. Pay attention to the context of which sports books are showing which numbers. Some of the more public shops out there still on the 4.5. A lot of the other places at 4. Gives you an idea, especially with what we just talked about sharp and public splits and about, you know, where the exposure is at the different operators that are out there.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Adam, because I think without naming names, I mean, there's a couple of very solid, you know, books out there that take a lot of action from a lot of sharps. You could say they're sharp books in terms of they welcome a lot of sharp action. There's a couple out there, and one in particular, a very, very public book where, you know, they may run two different numbers, or if you win, they kind of chop you down to where you kind of go away for them. And like, there was a game, I think it was the Carolina game, I think it was a couple weeks ago, where Carolina was favored by, like, there was one of the sharper books had Carolina like -6, and the, what I'm going to call a public book, was -7, -115. So sometimes just looking at knowing the profile of certain books and knowing their numbers gives you an idea where the money is. I mean, if you tell me the sharp book is running -6 on the game and the, what I'm going to call square book, is running -7, -115, that, you know, that tells you all you need to know, that the squares are running one way and the sharps are going the other way. So profiling the books is a very good asset, and you don't even have to, you know, pay for the Don Best screen. You could just use like the free service that they have. And, you know, it may be a bit delayed and stuff like that, but you still get a good idea of the splits in the market.
All right, so we move here to the NFC East, game 255, 256, the Redskins and the Giants. What's going on here?
Yeah, Redskins and Giants. You're looking forward to that one, too.
Yeah.
That one, and what was the other one? Oh, Jacksonville, Denver. I mean, if there were two games I wasn't going to sit down for, those two would be it. But actually, I mean, the Monday night game is not a pretty picture either. Washington and the Giants. Yes, Washington, obviously, not looking so good at 0-3 in the Giants. You've got at least, you know, a little bit of enthusiasm, I guess, surrounding them in terms of the, you know, the quarterback and how well he played and stuff like that. So what I'm kind of find interesting is that I've really got kind of two-way action on this game, and it's come even like from the public, it's come Washington +3 and public with public money, and also public money on the Giants -2.5. It's like they're kind of seeing value in the key numbers out there. Books are kind of split on this. If you look at the screen, between 2.5 -115 or 3 dog 20. Washington +3 -115 is where I did get sharp money. So this number has come down when it did touch the key number 3. I think it opened as low as 2. And like I said, from what I'm seeing, it just got bet up by public money from there. I just like my count, you know, below 2.5 is about 2-1 favoring the Giants. And when I got to 3, it's not quite 2-1, but does favor the Redskins at that point. But +3, -115. I know the quarterback situation with the Washington, it looks like he's going to be fine, Keenum. So he'll be back out there again. And of course, you know, Giants are looking towards the future, if you will. But, you know, I think defensively, perhaps, you know, that's why the Sharps really kind of looked and identified the difference here, is that Washington defensively, I think, is probably where the, you know, the kind of tip the scales for them.
All right. So we go to the next game. Game 257, 258, and I may be better off playing the lottery here instead of taking the side that I think I want to go with, but I guess we'll kind of wait and see, because I wouldn't be alone on this one with the Chargers laying a big number against the Dolphins, but some interesting sharp money on this game.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, I guess the number got to a point, or the opposition got to a point where I you know, the public finally, you know, decided to take a piece of Miami. So I've got a count that's not bad in terms of my wager count. It slightly actually favors Miami. We're, you know, talking about a team that has looked very, very ugly. And even against Dallas last week, I don't know, you know, they ended up getting beat pretty bad, but even at the start, they were kind of competitive. The game was close, I guess, if you will. But if you watch that game, and Dallas just looked kind of flat when they first got out there. So this is the first time, you know, so far this season, I know we're only in week 4, but it is the first time this season that I got money on Miami. Sharp money came plus 16.5. We're down to 15.5 and 15 right now on the Chargers. So I'm sitting at 15. There are some 15.5s out there, but plus 16.5 is where that sharp money came in. And the thing too is, if you look at the total of this game, I know the other totals with Miami were higher than this. We're sitting at 44. There's a 43.5 out there. Number opened at 45. So even the total's been bet down as well. And I think part of the reflection of, you know, this total dropping down and the spread dropping down and the sharp money on Miami is maybe not so much a buy into Miami as it is a sell on the Chargers. And also we talked about, you know, last year, the Chargers were one of those teams in terms of the pace of play were very, very slow. They just don't run a whole lot of plays. And when you have a slow pace to a game, it's hard to cover a big number like 16.5 and 17.
Well, again, I mean, that's something I talk about on all the editions of Bang the Book Radio here, looking for context clues in the market. And I talked about this with regards to college football on Thursday's show, looking to see what the line moves are telling you about the game flow. And also here, the Chargers traveling cross country, early kickoff, maybe expecting a sluggish start that can keep Miami in the game. So that's also part of the equation here.
Yeah, you combine a sluggish start with a low total and a team that plays a slow pace. That's... Yep. You know, a lot of clues out there.
Yeah, for sure. Makes it tough to get margin, as you said. So maybe this is the week where Miami actually does cover a number. Ooh. I don't know. I guess we'll kind of
maybe
we'll
it is.
Let's see. All right. Game 267-268 here. Tampa Bay takes on the Los Angeles Rams. Long trip for the Buccaneers here. What's going on with this game?
Yeah, this one too. And again, it's kind of a trend that started last year in terms of the total plays going on towards the over with Tampa Bay games. I know this initially opened like 49.5 and came down at first, but been pushed back up. 48.5 is where I took sharp money on the over. So over 48.5, I'm up to 49.5 as well. I think I'll be back to the original opener of 49.5 or 50 that was out there real quick. And again, it's just kind of like, you know, game flow. You look at these things. You look at the, you know, the differences between home and away splits with the quarterback Goff, for example. I think too, the Rams defense might be a bit overrated. Tampa Bay, I think if you give Winston any kind of time, he can push the ball down the field deep. And that's probably what, you know, was driving this. I mean, I think, you know, the more pressure you get on Winston, I think the worse he does, but you could probably say that about a lot of quarterbacks, but he's not really like the best check down kind of guy. He's good with the middle and deep balls. And the other thing too, kind of like the narrative that falls with this over is that if the Rams defense is maybe not as good as everyone thinks, the spread's sitting at -9. So you figure the Rams are going to get ahead of the game. And what's that going to force the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to do? Well, it's going to force them to go, you know, be aggressive when they're playing from behind and push the ball downfield, which again is going to lead to a back and forth kind of total. So you can't predict how the game is going to be played, but again, you look for stuff like that in terms of what happens when Tampa Bay gets behind. Now, are they going to have, if they get behind, now are they going to have success against the Rams? Now, if you watch it early, if this is kind of a back and forth run the game, you're going to say, okay, this is not going to get there because these guys are just beating each other up on the line. They're running the ball well. They're eating a lot of clock that way. But I think if the Rams strike quick and Tampa Bay has to play catch up, this number easily gets there.
All right, so we got one more game with sharp action, then one more game I know you want to talk about and I want to talk about here too. But the last game with sharp action, game 269-270, Seattle and Arizona out in the NFC West. What's going on here?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of kind of excitement, I guess, if you will, about Arizona with the new coach coming in and the changes and stuff like that with the quarterback situation. But quarterback in the NFL and that offense in the NFL just hasn't had a whole lot of success so far. We'll say that. I think, you know, the other problem too with Arizona is all the injuries on defense, and we'll get to that with the sharp money. We'll, you know, let the cat out of the bag. Was on Seattle the side at -4. We're up to -5.5 and -5 right now. I'm using 5.5 myself. Total wise, this one also opened at 46.5. I got sharp money at 47. I'm guessing it might have been sharp money that drove up initially as well to get to the 47. Sharp money in house is at 47. I'm up to 48 right now, and I'm just really, really tempted to hit the 48.5 and be the first one on the board at that, and I probably will right after this call. So -4 and over 47 is where the sharp money came in. And again, like Arizona, in terms of their defense, they've just had so many injuries. So you get the feeling that Seattle's probably going to have success with their offense. They're also probably going to, you know, have success getting pressure on Arizona and making, you know, the quarterback makes it, you know, kind of see what he can do coming from behind. I think, you know, The Arizona is just right now, just in terms of the side itself, I think they're just a sell team in terms of the sharp money right now. Offensive line issues, defensive issues with injuries. It's just a tough spot for them. And they, obviously, Seattle can put up a whole lot of points that we saw last week.
All right, so game 275-276. It does appear like somebody out there in the market got hit with some sharp money on this game. But you and I were talking about it before we started recording. You told me to make sure I mentioned this game. Again, game that's going to get a big handle, two very public, well-known teams in that Sunday night time slot. But what are you expecting here from this game in terms of the action that we see?
Yeah, like I know this line did open. And again, Dallas on the road is kind of like, you know, on a Sunday night football. That's one of those spots where sharps usually look for home dogs on Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night. That's just kind of like a given. Sharps look for those spots. We know that well. But this one, to me, it just kind of seems like a number that's going to tick back up to the three, and I might even see three plus juice. In-house, I haven't seen anything to indicate why the number's dropping from three down to 2.5. And I think, you know, you have different ways of handicapping games, and there's, you know, the different theories about how to go about them. Even sharps have their own different ways in terms of what kind of narratives they're looking at, whether they're just, you know, analytics based, all that kind of stuff. I mean, everyone's got their own opinion how to, you know, a different way to cook an egg, right? And this game, I just get the feeling, you know, the public is going to be on the home dog. My early count kind of indicates that it's not a massive count going the other way. So I'm not going to say that public money drove this off the three down to 2.5, because I haven't seen it in house, and I just don't think that's an accurate statement. But I do feel that this number is going to get driven back up. I think if you look at things, you know, stats in terms of, you know, points per play and yards per play, all that kind of stuff, I think the numbers are going to, you know, overwhelmingly favor Dallas, and I think this number is going to touch three again. If it went three in juice, I wouldn't be surprised. The only good thing is I don't think it's going to go off three. I think I'm probably going to get public money back the other way with the Saints. So this is one of the interesting games to watch for the week in terms of the market perspective.
Should be a whole lot of fun to watch, and again, it kind of peels back the curtain here on what the risk manager position entails, and also, you know, thinking about how some of these games are going to move. So Brent, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Awesome, Adam. Thanks for having me on, and look forward to a great weekend.
All right, there you go. There was the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook to finish up what was a very good week here, I think, on Bang the Book Radio. Some good feedback, some good listener questions, a lot of things that we got to here this week over the course of the shows. Coming up on our Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our Week 6 college football first look. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend. Good luck with your picks, everyone. And I will talk to you again on Monday.